Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
If you're into sports betting, Bet Online is where you should go to win money today. Whether it's live bets during games or futures for who you think will win the championship, Bet Online has all the latest odds, news, and information for all of your online betting needs. Visit the website today or use your mobile device to join and receive 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. So before the next big game, head on over to Bet Online and start playing today. Bet Online, your online sportsbooks experts. So, I don't know if you've heard, but apparently former NBA player Lamar Odom may be returning to professional basketball in Spain soon. I was reading a press release about how he started taking pH-balancing alkaline supplement called Balance 7, and that's what helped him bounce back from his hospitalization in 2015. He even said, "I have an enormous amount of energy, which is good for me. It's important when working out. I always need energy to level up." Couldn't agree more with Lamar. After watching him fight Aaron Carter in July's celebrity boxing match, I think it's safe to say that Balance 7 is working for him. Cool thing is, we've got a promotion running with Balance 7 right now, where if you go to their website, balance7.com, and use the code BELIEVE at checkout, you'll receive a free 4-ounce bottle of My Smooth Skin with any purchase of Balance 7 products. That product retails at $13.99, so I'd say it's worth it. Again, head to balance7.com and use the code BELIEVE at checkout to get in on the promotion. I know I will. If it worked for him, it can work for you too. And what's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of the Believe in Clippers podcast, right here on the Believe Podcast Network, presented by Bet Online. Jesse Cass and Alex Acker back with you here for yet another edition of the show. Alex, what's going on?
Solid, man. Everything's good over here in Italy.
Nice. Glad to hear that. And, you know, even though it's the NBA offseason, we know that sometimes that's the time where the most news is breaking out. And just as it seemed, at least momentarily, things were set for the Clippers. A pretty monumental trade, at least for them and in their culture and their identity and the player that is the main player that's departing from the trade. But I think that's, you know, right where we're jumping and start. Patrick Beverley, you know, 4 years with the club, heart and soul of the team. We've talked at length about what he's meant and the winning percentage for the group and obviously everything that he's means even when he's not playing with the attitude and the culture that he's instilled. So just your initial thoughts on the deal. You know, Patrick Beverley initially going to Memphis, Beverley, Rondo, and Oturu for Eric Bledsoe coming back, and then Beverley rerouted in a separate deal to Minnesota, which is where he ultimately ends up to play with the Timberwolves. But just your thoughts initially on hearing the deal and you know what it means for the Clippers and your reaction to it.
No, I mean, my first reaction was a shocker, to be honest with you. To get rid of your dog like that, you would think like he is pretty much the mascot on the team that brings the energy that you know what you're going to get as far as the tenacity that he brings. It's just incredible to take away that type of momentum, you know, that somebody that's going to guard everybody, that's not as scared of guard Luka Doncic or, you know what I mean, some of these big names that you need to stop, Steph Curry, the list goes on, you know. So it might have been one of the toughest moves for the Clippers, you know what I mean, just by the name of weight that he holds. But to see him leave, I think he gave everything he could for the team as far as the fans. You know, he's definitely going to be truly missed. To get somebody like Bledsoe, it's going to be you know, a great comparison of the two. Bledsoe's a lightning bolt, you know what I mean? He's speed, he's quick as hell. He uses his strength. He's a big guard, you know, size-wise. So it's a great, you know, situation where you're not taking away so much or you're not waiting for, like, a young guy. You're getting somebody that's going to be able to compete with these guys that they have and bring some, you know, some force as far as that front court more than anything. So I think it's a great, you know, smooth transition as far as the caliber of players that you're getting and you're taking away for sure.
It's a really interesting deal for the Clippers and, you know, some of the things you touched on, obviously, Patrick Beverley, who, you know, this front office, you know, whether you give a credit for it or not, but they're not afraid to make a move or, you know, go against popular opinion or hurt some feelings. You know, I think that they handled it, obviously, the right way. Beverley
has been gracious through the whole thing. You know, he sent out a thank you video to the fans of the Clippers, so he's obviously someone who's felt that love and appreciation as well. But, you know, we saw it earlier this year, or this past season, with Lou Williams getting dealt. He had that same kind of impact with the team. Of course, you go further back with, you know, Tobias Harris, and of course before that with Blake Griffin. You know, the team is kind of proactive in how they make these moves, and, you know, if they feel like they can find a better fit, or if someone, you know, whether it be injury history, whatever it is, making a move that they feel like is for the betterment of the team. But again, like you said, this one is a tough one because of how universally loved Beverly is within Clipper Nation. And I think, you know, he might not be that loved outside of Clipper Nation, but he's one of those guys where if he's on your team, you really notice and respect all of the hard work, especially on the defensive end. But again, three and D guys shot over 40% from three for multiple years as well. So, and as you alluded to, the kind of stepping up in big moments, you mentioned the guys he's guarded, Donovan Mitchell, Devin Booker, you know, he did a really good job on both those guys in the playoffs, sure, and hit two big threes and had some great games to close out Utah. So someone who clearly can come through in the playoffs, but, you know, the Clippers with, I think, maybe a lack of getting to the rim, that driving ability. I think that's what has driven this trade, and we talked about it a lot last year where, you know, live by the jump shot, die by the jump shot. That's not all on Beverly, but he's a guy in this system who's primarily, you know, spot up, hit shots, and then do his thing on the defensive end, where maybe this front office scene, especially without Kawhi for an extended period of time, might need a jolt of, you know, that playmaker who gets into the lane, finishes at the rim, creates for others. So you understand kind of the mindset of where they're going with bringing in someone like Bledsoe. But it's an interesting deal as well, as you mentioned.
It's definitely interesting for sure, yeah. And Bledsoe, he's definitely somebody that you respect, you know what I mean, on both ends of the floor as well too. So his defense takes credibility as well. Not so much as Pat Beverly, which he's known for, but just the mindset of actually Pat Beverly, you know, running to the corner as a point guard is kind of putting so much more energy on the main guys, you know what I mean? So to take away and give that to somebody that's actually going to be able to produce, like you said, it's going to be penetrating it and driving and kicking and looking for their role player, I mean, their elite players that can knock down shots, and giving them, you know, great looks instead of always shooting with one or two hands in their faces. Letting them see the basketball, I mean, the ball from that standpoint is going to be awesome, you know. So I think it's going to be really interesting. This is a huge calculated move for the Clippers, and I'm excited. I think it was definitely a smart piece, and sometimes a huge piece, like train your star player, is not always the right thing, you know what I mean? You need these small pieces to work, and, you know, they have enough time and to figure out what does work when you have somebody like Kawhi Leonard that's going to be out for an extended time as well, too. Paul George definitely needs somebody to actually take up a little bit more of that slack as well. And, you know, Summer League is going to be awesome, too. We've seen a lot of these young guys actually playing their butts off and giving spurts as well, too. So it's going to be awesome for sure.
Yeah, it'll be definitely really interesting. And, you know, we talked about kind of the reason why it was so important to bring Reggie Jackson back. I think, you know, Reggie should probably retain that starting role for just how incredible he was. But even, you know, all the better for someone like Bledsoe, where, you know, maybe he's that spark plug off the bench. He'll still play a lot of minutes, but can kind of have the ball in his hands more with a second unit where there's not as much pressure on him as, you know, previous stops where Milwaukee, he was on a championship contending team, or he's the starting point guard and, you know, supposed to be the team's third best player. He's going to be required to produce with the Clippers, but it's not going to be that same level of pressure, at least right away, to be the main guy or one of the top guys. He's just got to kind of fill his small role, you know, a big role at that, of getting to the rim and really setting the table for a lot of guys. But, you know, if he's engaged, as I said, he's capable of doing that, even as his stock has kind of been, lowered and devalued over these past couple of years with some of his playoff struggles. I think you still look at, you know, someone who's averaged no less than, I think last year New Orleans was lowest in a long time at a little over 12, but, you know, someone who averages 15 points a game for his career around there, and, you know, can rebound, can, as you said, defend. He's a former all defensive team selection, so he's someone who's not, you know, a slouch on that end of the floor. So you understand kind of the thought process and the move, and it will be really intriguing to see how it turns out when the Clippers start up in October.
Yeah, let me ask you something. You think as far as the Bledsoe team, which you said for sure he wasn't feeling the vibe as far as his leadership role that he needed. Do you think it's going to be a different sighting with Bledsoe, kind of like a redemption type year? We always see him actually, struggling from 3-point range as well too. So maybe we'll get a spurt of him actually, coming in with a trigger this year with the Clippers. How do you think he would play and pan out with this team?
Yeah, I think that's probably the hope and the goal for the Clippers coaching staff and front office. And I think for them, you can point to as recently as last year with guys like Reggie Jackson and Nick Batum, who, came from situations where their team was struggling, or they might not have been playing that well, not as highly motivated, whatever it may have been, where they just weren't showing the best version of themselves. And Ty Lue and this coaching staff was able to bring out the premier top level part of their games, and I think that they're betting on this coaching staff kind of finding that same niche for Eric Bledsoe as well. So I think that's obviously the hope. The 3-point shot, as you mentioned, is come and gone. He's not a great shooter. He's had regular seasons where he's been decent. He's had some big time playoff struggles, which you won't really know until you get into that situation again. But maybe a better suited roster for him will help him there, where, we know New Orleans didn't make the playoffs last year, but Eric Bledsoe had probably his fewest drives to the rim in quite some time, but he was playing on maybe the team with the worst spacing in the league, where, Zion's a guy who's getting to the rim. They had Steven Adams, clogging the lane. No real shooters for him to work with, so, negated a lot of what his game is about. So with the Clippers, we know they have no shortage of shooters. They have a ton of them, so that should really help Bledsoe when he's on the floor. He can have an array of shooters that are on the three-point line, kind of opening up the middle of the lane and letting him excel at what he's best at.
Yeah, and penetrate. Yeah, I think he's really like a lost jewel that nobody has – I shouldn't say nobody. We haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah.
We know of Bledsoe, but we haven't seen too much of him, A, because he hasn't been in the playoffs for so long, and B, there's nowhere to play a guy in that space, and what you said, like everybody penetrating and getting to the hole. You got young guys like Zoe, that's going to take a lot of that tick where they want him to shine, Bledsoe is definitely one of those guys that's in his season as a prime player, and he needs to be shown with some prime guys that actually know the game as well. And I think he's in the moment of trying to win something bigger than, just a individual accolade right now. And I think this is going to be a great fit for him.
Yeah, and of course, a return and a homecoming for Bledsoe, who was started his career with the Clippers and played his first couple seasons in L.A., back with the very start of the Lob City years with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin, and being part of that core before eventually, being priced out and becoming somewhat of a star with Phoenix for a couple of years before finally settling in with Milwaukee. But, I'm excited to see how it works out, to circle back to Beverly and obviously what he's meant to the team. I don't think it can be understated with not only just what he produced on the floor, and that's reflected in the win percentage, up over 70% of the team's games he played in, they won. He just really, beyond that, embodied kind of a culture and a heart and soul of the team that, of course, resonated with the team, but I think even more so resonated with the fan base, where we know in Clipper Nation and Clipper Land that, we know Clippers are the underdogs in the city. It's always a Lakers town. It's always a Lakers city, but having a guy like Beverly who unabashedly, not afraid to talk and say anything and kind of puff out his chest and be proud of being a Clipper, that wasn't always the case with this team, to have guys who are so gung-ho about being part of this team and this fan base and this culture. So when you talk about guys like Lou Williams and, Blake back in the day and obviously Beverly and what he's meant, I don't think it's any secret why he's so beloved by the fan base and why there was such a strong reaction of kind of sadness from the Clippers faithful for seeing Patrick Beverly go, just for what he's meant to the team and just kind of how much he embodies the entire fan base as a whole.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. No, that's true.
Yeah. So, true. You know, we can't wait to. We wish Patrick Beverley the best. We'll see him in a Minnesota uniform, which should be interesting on its own right. With, you know, he kind of slides in nicely to that backcourt in a kind of a leadership role with a very young team, which is how things kind of started for him with the Clippers. When you think about the early start with Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and Landry Shamet, you know, Beverley was kind of one of the early leaders for that. He now goes to a team with, you know, young guys like Karl-Anthony Towns and D'Angelo Russell and Anthony Edwards. It should be a fun spot to see him in and see if he can help Minnesota, who, you know, has really struggled winning in the past couple of years, see if he makes that winning impact with Minnesota in the future.
Yeah, no, I think Pat Beverley's somebody that would fit into any team, you know, with that attitude that he has, that dog attitude is definitely welcome on any team, especially a young generation that's trying to come up and needs to know how to win, you know what I mean? And it's a great situation. You know, Pat Beverley's been a person that is not always looking for the leadership of just trying to win a game. He wants to win every single game. You know, so that's the key thing as far as bringing in a veteran like that and molding the young guys as far as how to win every single game and going about it, you know, being productive. And it starts just bringing in every single day in practice. And he is no slouch at that. He's going to be boastful. He's going to talk, you know, and be a leader that he is. You know, hats off to him and what he did and to continue that journey for sure. It's going to be remarkable for him in his career.
And that's a really great point when you mentioned that, where there's probably not a team that he wouldn't fit in on. And I kind of thought, you know, was just thinking about it right now, where even when the trade happened initially and you kind of get over the shock of Beverley being traded, I was like, oh, you know, he kind of fits well with that Grizzlies team. And then obviously they move him to Minnesota and it's like, oh, well, he fits well with them. And yeah, you might be right. He might just fit well everywhere, kind of because of what he brings is something that really every team needs.
For sure.
So we wish Pat Bev the best. We'll see him back at Staples Center as the schedule just released. We'll get into that as well. But he'll come back early in the season, November 13th. The Timberwolves come to Staples Center, so that'll be an emotional return for Beverley, and we'll see how, you know, Bledsoe fits in and everything. And just to kind of put a bow on that trade, we know obviously with Beverley it was, you know, Rondo and Daniel Oturu out in the trade as well. We know Oturu, you know, he obviously hadn't cracked the rotation, a young guy who, you know, unknown if he'll really carve out a spot in the league or not. And then Rondo, of course, who, you know, interesting, because we were on board with that move, and for a minute, and when he first arrived, it looked like playoff Rondo was there, and then it kind of was the reverse. They got playoff Rondo in the regular season, and in the playoffs they kind of got regular season Rondo.
I don't know what it was. I thought they was actually trying to hold him off for playoffs, but he never showed up at all. So he must have missed a plane. But for the most part, he got his ring. You know what I mean? So it's kind of hard to get a ring and be that person. Searching and trying hard to obtain that championship ring with another team, you know what I mean, to build that same chemistry that you had with the Los Angeles Clippers that he came from. So it was unexpected for sure. We definitely expected those things as far as what he could bring, and you know, he's a seasoned vet. So right now I think Rondo's definitely coasting, and he's getting that bag, and he's actually just, you know, staying in shape and just loving the game right now. And hats off to what he's been doing all the way through. So wherever he goes and bounces, for sure, I think he's going to be a leader in the locker room, more so the importance that he'll bring in that setting rather than on the court, his appearance, for sure.
Yeah, 100%. And I think you kind of hit it right on the head there. Like, I don't know if he'll end up staying in Memphis, you know, if they're going to keep him or not. But if he does, then like you said, he'll probably have that mentoring leadership role where he's kind of guiding Ja Morant, you know, an explosive and up-and-coming and superstar young point guard. And if not, he'll probably latch on to another contender. And even if he's not playing big minutes, you know, he's someone who will provide great locker room leadership and insight. And to his credit with the Clippers, you know, even when he didn't play in the playoffs, when he kind of got put to the side, You know, he stayed positive. He stayed engaged. He was with the group. You know, he was never sulking. So from that, you know, end of thing and perspective, you give Rondo credit. And as you said, hope that he finds a way to kind of regain his form. But again, he's also a player he's been in the league a long time and may just be, you know, aging as all players eventually do.
For sure. Yeah.
And as we continue talking about the Clippers roster, you know, one thing that's kind of at least for now, you know, the glaring need looking at this roster after the deal is that center position and the third center. We know that, of course, Zubats and Serge Ibaka are that two-man tandem, and then they can go smaller with Batum and Morris playing those roles. But the timetable on Ibaka is uncertain. You know, he'll come back sometime early in the season, but we don't know exactly how long, if it'll be a couple weeks, a month, or two. You know, a back can be tricky. So, you know, where do you see the Clippers going with that third center spot, or someone who, at least early in the year, is going to essentially be the backup center to Zubats, and how they kind of attack that?
Yeah, for sure. I think they got to get Serge Ibaka out of the podcast right now.
the how hungry are you cooking? Right.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the French food that he's cooking that's the problem, but we'll figure that out as we go along. But yeah, I think that's going to be something that they look into. They definitely have one more roster to pick, like you said, and that's got to be the most important key. You can't have a reliance of Zubac, who's fresh into that role of being a starting center, and he definitely deserves it. Hats off to him and what he's been doing. We've been big Zubac fans. He's been eye-opening for the past 2 years that we've had this podcast, you know, just for the minutes that he's had, whether it was big or small. He's been a huge presence in the playoffs, which is phenomenal. And he's a shooting star right now, you know, and his vertical's going up as far as the stardom. But continue as an 82-game season and, you know, being an elite wrecking force in playoffs, you can't put all your diamonds in one bag for sure. So you definitely need some part of a sighting where you can have – I would literally go for a veteran – if there's one out there as far as a big man, just a mentorship as far as what they can give for Zubac and a preparation, you know, because you go head-to-head with some of these big-time elite centers, and there's a few of them out there, 76ers, you know what I mean? You got your man, this unstoppable from that standpoint. So you need guys that can actually guard and defend, because Zubac he's a big man, but at the same time, he is a little bit thin, you know, in the waist. So you got to be mindful of that for sure. And I would definitely go with a veteran. That'd be my pick for sure.
Yeah, you know, it'll be interesting to see who they're able to attract, you know, in that role, and you know, if they're able to find anyone that can really, you know, provide any kind of spark. You know, at minimum deals, you're not always going to get, you know, the cream of the crop, of course, but a lot of the great teams, you know, they'll find guys that can contribute. And obviously the Clippers, you know, they're paying Batum just over the minimum now. He's obviously, you know, what he turned into is amazing. So anything close to that in terms of production would be huge. And, you know, we'll see who they go after. The center market, you know, Aaron Baines is out there, although he has an injury he's dealing with. You know, Paul Millsap is more of a power forward, but he's still on the market. And that's a veteran type of guy who, of course, is, you know, well-seasoned and played in a whole bunch of big games. And you know, and then there's a lot of the younger guys looking to prove themselves, you know, trying to think of those centers that are available. You know, Isaiah Hartenstein, who played with the Rockets, you know, big body, you can kind of shoot outside and inside. Luke Kornet, the same thing. So there's guys that are available. And of course, you know, just coming off summer league, you know, maybe we know this Clippers scout team has been strong lately. Maybe they saw someone who's, you know, hanging on the fringes of a roster that they can add and potentially step into that third center role for the club.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we got to get one of these Antetokounmpo brothers, man, probably, because they racking up rings, man. We got to throw one of these guys on our team.
That is true. It's not a bad point. I mean, Alex Antetokounmpo, the fourth brother, was undrafted. I think he's latched on somewhere summer league-wise, but, you know, maybe, like you said, the Antetokounmpo brothers are winning rings, so that might not be a bad plan.
No, for sure. No, I think there's going to be something where they do an amazing job as far as the recruiting and the scouting. So they got their eyes on somebody for sure right now that, you know, is going to be happening real soon and be in the mix. And I'm looking forward to filling this roster. We got a full schedule ahead, and it's just phenomenal to actually see that, you know, it's about time to get things going right now.
Yeah, for sure. And before we get to the schedule, we know here on the pod, we love to do grades for whether it's free agency. We've done it with the NBA draft and kind of going on the note of the draft. Summer League wrapping up, or did wrap up for the Clippers and the NBA. So I'm going to give our quick grades for the Clippers. Rookies plus one. We know Jay Scrubb is technically a second-year player, but having only played in a handful of games, we'll throw him in with the rookies and give the grades for those four players. So, Alex, let's start out with the first-round pick, or the only first-round pick of this year for the Clippers, Keon Johnson, who was taken 21st overall out of Tennessee. What grade do you give Keon for his performance in the summer league?
Man, I like Keon. It showed a lot. I would say, start off the top, I'll probably give him an A. I definitely would give him an A. You know what I mean? Just him not being scared, more so. And him, I can see him actually working on his ball handling a lot, which is phenomenal, you know. So it paid off. That's the one thing that I was looking at. Are these guys actually moving like NBA players or like college players? And he has the tenacity to move like, not tenacity, but he has the physique to move like an NBA player. He's smooth with it. He's comfortable making, you know, certain moves and being out there in one-on-one situations and attacking. So I would definitely give him an A across the board for sure.
Yeah, Keon, I thought, you know, like you said, athletically, I think he's already there. You know, shooting wasn't quite there yet. He did have one game where he shot it well, but he's the type of player where I think he'll get better when he's playing with better players, because he's not, at this point at least, you know, that go-to type of guy. He'll feed off of, you know, the spacing that's provided by great players like Paul George and the ball movement, where he can be a cutter and a slasher and use that athleticism to, you know, finish at the rim and play solid defense on the other end. So, you know, I thought in summer league, you know, it was up and down for Keon, but, you know, I'll give him a B. I think the potential is super high. I think he was finding his footing a little bit, but I am still optimistic about, you know, what he can do. And I think it's also important to say, like, whether the grade's an A or an F for any player, like, we've seen in the past. Yeah, summer league is also not the end-all, be-all. We know that, you know, what was it, Trae Young's first game, he was 0 for 10, and everyone was saying, oh, he's a bust, and we see what he is now. So, you know, we've seen that a lot, where people get written off for summer league, and that's obviously, you know, never a smart thing to do.
Yeah, for sure. No, it definitely is. Yeah, but it's true, though. He has spurts, for sure. And like you said, to chime in what you said, I see him actually getting those little loose cuts back door, you know, finishing strong and one power plays that we saw Manning was getting, you know what I mean, getting the crowd involved and stuff like that. And if he can fill that role, it'll be exciting for sure for him to actually get those little 50-50 balls and loose balls and making, you know, key adjustments as far as what they need off the bench for sure.
Yeah.
Moving forward.
Yeah, no question. All right, so let's go to Jason Preston, you know, point guard out of Ohio, was taken high in the second round. What do you think of Jason's performance?
Man, Preston's actually, his IQ was what I was looking for as far as a point guard, and it was pretty impressive, you know what I mean? It was a little timid as far as him being out there sometimes and trying to figure out how to get by his guy. I think he has a great first step, and he needs to work on his explosiveness and getting to the hole with some contact. But for the most part, I would definitely give him probably a B, I would say, for sure, too.
Yeah, I think I'd go with the same thing with a B for Preston as well, where I think, like you said, the first game and a half, maybe two games, he was timid and kind of not, you know, not aggressive, not able to find his footing. But the latter half, the last three games of summer league, he looked really comfortable. I thought, you know, you could see, like you said, the IQ, the passing ability, I think, is off the charts with his ability to find guys at any spot on the floor. And, you know, he had some impressive finishes and stuff as well. So I'll give him a B. But again, you know, positive upside there for someone who once he gets a little stronger, you know, gets his NBA body going, he's someone who, you know, he's got good size, like 6'5", You can see, as we said, a great passer, unselfish player. So, I think there's a nice place for Preston and a high ceiling for him as well.
Yeah, for sure. He got a crazy time to develop too, more than anything. And he's going to learn a lot from these veterans.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. Obviously, Reggie Jackson and Eric Bledsoe at the point right now, and then you've got other guys who will have ball handling duties like, Kennard and Paul George, of course, and Mann. So Preston will probably not get a ton of time this year, but as you said, he'll have a great front row seat and learning experience, and he'll be able to kind of develop as he works alongside those guys, which would be really fun to see.
Yep.
All right, let's go to Brandon Boston, who, such an interesting trajectory for him, where Sierra Canyon, before he went to Kentucky, one of the top recruits in the country, had a rough year at Kentucky, fell all the way from a projected, or beginning of the year, top 10 pick to 51. Clippers grab him.
Crazy.
What'd you think of him in the summer league? He looked impressive in the summer league, and often at times like the Clippers' most confident scorer. What'd you see with Brandon Boston?
No, across the board. And I just love how the Clippers was not playing around with his contract. They signed him to a 2-year deal.
Yeah.
No matter if he came 51 or whatever, they knew what kind of player he was, So I was impressed with him. More so just impressed with his athleticism and with, him being a Cali kid. I'm always rooting for those guys.
Yeah.
More so. But, I just like the pickup of him actually to attack the rim more than anything. And, just having a tenacity of, you can see he had like a little chip on his shoulder when he was playing, for sure.
Yeah, no, and to your point about the contract, not a huge money contract, but still the highest paid guaranteed contract for a player drafted in the 50s in NBA history. So like you said, the Clippers, no hesitation about locking him up for a couple of years and getting him into the system and having him ready to go. And we talked about it on last week's episode, but for all of these guys, especially Johnson and Boston wing players, who better to learn from than Paul George and Kawhi Leonard? So that should honestly and hopefully help in his development as he goes forward. But yeah, I'd give Boston an A for what he did in the summer league and really high expectations for him going forward. Again, not sure, this season how much he'll play, but I think there's a lot of upside there for Boston to be potentially a really strong player in the league.
Yeah, I think he is going to be. What would you compare his game, not to put you on the hot seat, but what would you compare his game to possibly be, that you can see him actually imitating or being like a poor man's version of, as he gets stronger and gets in, into his rhythm and his physique and stuff like that? What would you think his game would maturely be, image wise?
I mean, right now, and I've heard some people make this comparison as well, both from style of game and body style. Brandon Ingram is someone who comes to mind for me. Yeah, just kind of the smooth nature of his game. Obviously, the ability to get inside, hit from the mid range, developing that 3-point shot. Just even the mannerisms and the way that they play is very similar to me. I think Boston's a little shorter. We know Ingram has more, he was often compared early on to Durant, which is obviously a lofty comparison because Ingram's a little taller. But, outside of the height, Boston's still, I believe, 6'7", 6'8", so not small in any regard. But, I think kind of the shiftiness, the smooth nature of his game, the mid-range jump shooting, and kind of the length. I see Ingram as a comparison for someone that, obviously, like you said, if you kind of hit that ceiling, that would be an amazing find for the Clippers.
No, for sure. And I think that's what they're banking on, because they locked him in of that much time where he can actually blossom into that person. You hit it on the head. I was thinking Ingram before anything. And I seen it. Just the way he walks, his mannerism is ridiculous. You know what I mean? Yeah. Smooth, calm. I'm in my own zone. Can't nobody distract me or defer me from getting to my spots and hitting you with counters, you know what I mean, using my size and length and not wasting no time and energy on doing silly moves extra than rather just getting to my spots, you know what I mean, attacking. So I definitely see that in him more than anything, too, is that mirror image of him being Ingram at that particular point, in 2 or 3 years down the line.
Yeah, that would obviously be a huge successful draft pick for the Clippers if it ends up like that. We'll go to the final player we're grading here. Jay Scrubb, mentioned, of course, second year in the league. He missed most of last year, so essentially a rookie in playing time, but he, of course, had all the time with the team last year. What do you give his summer league grade for Jay Scrubb?
Scrubb is, you can tell he had a year underneath his belt for sure. It just showed with his confidence and him actually being able to get out there and show what he was capable of doing. I'll give him a B2 for sure, you know. Not a lot of minutes came from him, but, you know, I guess they know what he can do. But for the most part, you can just literally see, like I said before, that it shows a huge difference for the guys that actually been, even if they weren't even playing substantial amount of minutes, but if they had that local one attached to them, you can see the IQ, the poise, and the patience and the timing. And he definitely has that, you know what I mean? And it comes with confidence of being bumped around with these veteran guys in the league and stuff like that, being mentored. And, you know, he's a smooth killer, you know, I would definitely say.
Yeah, I go with a B as well. I think we saw on display, you know, his ability as a scorer. And, you know, that includes, of course, his shooting, but just someone who's kind of naturally one of those spark plug type scorers. I think we talked about it last week as well, but you know, someone like Jordan Clarkson, where you put him in, you know, he can get buckets, and that's kind of the strongest point of his game right now. His ability to score the basketball at different levels, and you know, we saw some nice rebounding performances from him. You know, I think he needs to improve as a passer and on the defensive end, but yeah, I think for what they've seen in him so far, and obviously missing pretty much all of last year, getting his health and his footing right, I thought it was another, you know, nice performance from a Clippers youngster. And a lot of these guys, especially since, you know, three of them are second round picks with Preston, Boston, and Scrubb, you know, the fact that the Clippers have potentially players who can be contributors at some point in all three of them, it would be a huge success for just, you know, players in the first round don't always pan out, let alone late in the second round. So I think that you're looking at it that way. If they get, you know, production out of all four, you know, all three of these guys, or even a couple of them, that's a big win for the Clippers in their scouting department and in drafting.
No, for sure. It shows great value. You know, you would wish you can actually keep all these guys to develop and mature to be the player that you want them to be. But I think, you know, it's definitely going to have some cap where these guys can blossom and be somewhat of a value, you know what I mean, if need be traded or something like that. But each one of these guys are really remarkable, and they're going to be able to, you know, probably get a chance to showcase their talent this year, putting on their jersey and seeing it. So I'm looking forward to, you know, each one of these guys' success. They're young, so, you know, Clipper fans, bear with them, you know what I mean, don't bash them, more so just, you know, look for, you know, that spurt of energy from these guys and, you know, cheering them on.
Yeah, no question about it. So, you know, hopefully, like you said, at some point we'll see all these guys get an opportunity. We know that in, you know, obviously the early part of the season, or maybe bulk of it, no Kawhi. So maybe there is that opportunity to jump in there, even with, you know, a lot of depth and a lot of talent at both the guard and wing positions. You never know. Someone can kind of claw their way into the rotation. So that'll be exciting to see. Before we wrap up here on this week's episode of Believe in Clippers, the NBA schedule was just released today.
Awesome.
You know, the Clippers, you know, obviously early on, you're not going to go through every single game here, but they start on the road at Golden State. That should be a nice, really fun opener. I think Klay Thompson will not be ready yet, but, you know, anytime you got Steph Curry and obviously Paul George on the Clippers side, that should be a really fun kind of opening night matchup. And then, you know, home opener, they've got the Grizzlies, you know, October, they got Portland at home, Cleveland at home, they play Portland on the road. You know, so a potential for, you know, that start could go either way, where you have all teams that are kind of in similar footing, where they're all pretty solid, you know, outside of Cleveland, but even they have, you know, a lot of young talent. All games that are kind of toss-up games, and, you know, the season isn't won or lost in the first few games, but, you know, it could go either way. It could be a great start, could be a terrible start, could be, you know, a 500 start for those first, you know, 5-6 games where the Clippers will, you know, kind of see how they're adjusting to life without Kawhi Leonard. You know, they did obviously in the playoffs as well, but kind of getting ready for, you know, a full season, or at least a good chunk of a season without you know, one of their best players or their top best player.
For sure. I mean, you got to consider this as well. So you got Steph Curry, you got Ja Morant, elite four-star scorers that they're coming at you the first mark of the game, you know, first game, second game. You would think that you have, you know, Kawhi Leonard that would, you know, that will play defense, then you eliminate Pat Beverly as well. So the locker room is like, all right, who's guarding these guys now? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So who's going to step up and actually be that other half of the court that they need to lock down, you know? And we're talking about guys that it doesn't matter if, you know, Pat Beverly's in front of them or Kawhi Leonard, they're still getting 30, you know? So
yeah,
that just shows, you know, how awesome this league is, more so how serious that the Clippers got to take it and step up early and be a threat on that defensive end, you know?
Yeah, it'll be immediate kind of early pressure on, well, of course, we know Paul George is always going to defend well, but guys like mentioned Eric Bledsoe, you know, Terrence Mann, obviously, with what he can do. So, you know, those are guys that you looked at to be defenders here early on. For the Clippers, you know, kind of looking through the schedule, no Christmas Day game for the Clippers this year. I think, you know, the league obviously,
man, that sucks.
You know, yeah, not seeing the Clippers as big a draw without Kawhi, although they do have still a good chunk of nationally televised games, but no Christmas Day game. They got, I believe, four sections of five games and seven nights, which is tough, 14 back-to-backs. You know, so some tough portions of the schedule. So we'll see how, you know, that ultimately goes. They have a big 8-game road trip in late January, 2 6-game homestands throughout the year, and, you know, looking all the way to the end, they'll have at least their last 4 games of the season at home with New Orleans, Phoenix, Sacramento, and Oklahoma City. So we'll see. You know, there's a lot to digest there, but, you know, ups and downs of the schedule as always with, you know, the back-to-backs and, you know, the 5-7 and all that, but just kind of par for the course what the Clippers have dealt with in the past.
Yeah, man, that's crazy. When you was telling me all that, I was thinking I had flashbacks. Like, oh my god, that's a lot of traveling. I can't believe I did all that crap.
you've been in the thick of it, and for this Clippers team as well, it kind of boils down to obviously we know Kawhi's status for a while and Serge probably for the first part of the season as well, but it'll really show the importance of health for this team, and that kind of ties back into the Beverly Bledsoe trade as well, where I think part of the reason they made that trade is because Beverly has been hurt so much during regular seasons, and Bledsoe's been very durable, where he plays almost every game all season long in the past, so you know, health will be very, very important for the Clippers going forward.
Yeah, I definitely will be. I'm excited. Definitely excited. Let's go, man.
All right, let's go. That is going to do it for this week's edition of the Believe in Clippers podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. You know the deal. Rate, review, subscribe. 5 stars, always appreciated. We're on all podcast platforms. So, Alex, we'll do it again next week. And for all of you out there, thanks for tuning in here on the Believe Podcast Network.
Let's go.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.